from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Happy Friday to you. It is Sports Daily, and we are wrapping up the sports weekend. Headed into the sports weekend, where we're going to get a lot of football action in the NFL. We are through the quarterfinals of the CFP, and we get college basketball to talk about, including a conference opener tonight for the Shockers of Wichita State, and game two of the Big 12 schedules for KU and K-State. Pay attention to the weather out there, everybody. We know K-State women, for instance, if you were planning on heading up to Manhattan to watch that incredible team, that has been moved. So just eyes and ears alert, as we're going to get some ice and some snow all across the state this weekend. But we'll be here to preview all of it. We're glad you're with us. It's Jacob Albracht, Tommy Kester, Jad Chambers producing for us. The IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP, which is the official breakfast partner of Xbox. Come in and try the decadent, fully loaded French toast only at IHOP, and we have it ready for you to chime in. You can also chime in on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X, as always. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app, and you can leave us your voice messages there on the Odyssey app as well. A lot to get to today. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Hey, happy Friday. Good to see you today. It's kind of like the last hurrah, at least for, you know, when we're in usually doing the show live. We're moving to morning drive on Monday, so excited about that, and looking forward to jumping right in.
Yeah, it'll be a blast. So if you haven't heard that news, we are going to grow the show two more hours and come at you 2 hours earlier, from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. So those hours now filled by us, those are drive time hours in the business. We're excited to have those. And we will take those. And then, you know, for everybody that listens to us right now, we're a part of your radio routine. Nothing changes. You'll still catch us from 9 to 11. No problem. If you're watching us on the video stream right now, take a minute here. Tommy is on the other side of the board. So there'll be a lot of things behind the scenes as we're making this transition that we're trying to get the hang of. So bear with us as we do that. But one thing I'd be remiss if I didn't say is the worst part about the move, our least favorite part about the move, is that Jad Chambers won't be sitting where Tommy's sitting right now. He's over with Steve and Ted during those hours. So he won't be, you know, gone. He'll be right down the hall as we, you know, panic and things catch on fire to come help us out. But he won't be sitting there chiming in. And we're really sad about that. By far our least favorite thing. So thank you to Jad.
Well,
as Tommy is. Oh, Jad's got a microphone.
Yeah, so hey, we're actually switched. So Jad is usually where I am, and then vice versa. So we've got him switched.
Yeah, I'm sitting right over here, and just where Tommy would usually sit. Actually, I'm getting this seat set up, and then going to move over and get Paul set up. But and I'll still be helping you guys out behind the scenes, doing some things like helping Tommy once your show is going. I'll be helping Tommy behind the scenes, so I'll still be working and doing a lot of work for Sports Daily. It's just you won't really hear me during the show at all.
Yeah,
anymore.
you'll be the artist behind the podcast version of the show.
That's right.
Every day.
That's
you'll put all that together like you normally do. So, still a very integral part of Sports Daily.
And the credit line would still say produced by Jad Chambers, right? If that part doesn't change, but as far as the on-air piece, you've got very important things you're doing over at Steve and Ted, and I would just, you know, advocate for some sort of panic button for Tommy to start buzzing when things aren't going correctly, to run down the hall and help us out. But
let's be real. It's going to be produced by Jad Chambers, screwed up by Tommy Kester. Like, I'm going to screw the show up, then Jad's going to come in and fix it every day.
I was going to give you co-production credit.
You don't have to give me any kind of credit, Jad.
Yeah, we don't need any of that.
I think I'd rather you had co-production credit. That way we can get away with saying, well, Tommy was the one that...
you just want to blame me for all the issues.
Yeah, more or less. And I've already talked with Ted Woodward over there, and he has been more than willing to take over for me for just, you know, a little bit if I need to come over here and, you know, get something going
fix
right.
Fix something.
Yeah.
Yes, that is correct. Jad is basically an engineer at the same time as he is a producer, which in our business is the guy that fixes things. And You know, we promise, if Jad, if you put that hat on, we promise to always try to turn it off and turn it back on again first before we call you. We'll save everybody that step.
That's we appreciate
the old joke
that.
In
Thanks.
The business is the engineer's always going to ask you that question first. Well, did you try turning it off and turning it back on again? Yes, we did. And it's on fire. I don't think that's going to help. It'll be fun. We love it. And there's going to be a lot of, look, we have hard breaks now. Like there's going to be a little, you do something the same way for a decade and things change and it'll take these old dogs a few minutes to learn the new tricks, but we're doing that on Monday.
By the way, it's funny when we have those hard breaks hit and the music is playing, you know, it used to be you and I could have a conversation and kind of know like, hey, we need to take a break here soon. We'll get out of our conversation. Now we don't have a choice. So if you hear the music playing, that means that we've got to go to break and there's a countdown. And it's kind of funny because I know Jacob, you can't see Jad, but Jad has been like a couple times with me yesterday holding his fingers up like counting down the seconds we have left until we go to break. I might have to do that for you once we actually start with all of this on Monday.
We will get the hang of it. I have done plenty of television shows with hard breaks. It's just never been this show, right? And we have one hard break and it's like the very end of the show typically. We don't even have that anymore. So look, we're going to get the hang of it. And when people tell us to be quiet, we'll be quiet. And if we cut you off, we apologize. There's good reason for that. It's because either we will or a commercial will. So a lot of things that are going to change on Monday. We are really excited about it, though. It is it is a really good thing for KFH. It's a really good thing for Sports Daily because our goal is to always grow this show and expand this show and do everything we can to help you listen on the podcast and bring in great insiders to help us get into, the stories and the content that you want to hear about. And that stuff's all really important to us. So moving now and growing by 2 hours and getting into a window where we think we can really hit a new audience who's driving to work every day or whatever it is that you're doing, driving to school, whatever, that's going to be really exciting for the show. And again, that happens on Monday. So on Monday, you'll hear us at 7 o'clock and we will go on the air. And if you, again, if you listen to us from 9 to 11, nothing changes for you. We're still there from 9 to 11. So it really is just a growth of the show and we're excited to do it. And there's a full lineup change coming on KFH, by the way, not just us, that we're also excited about. Jim Rome is sliding to later in the afternoons. You'll get Bob and Jeff now again in afternoon drive, which I know a lot of people are really excited about.
How about Rich Eisen, by the way?
Rich Eisen's doing on board.
He's taken Jim Rome's regular slot from 11 to 2. Then Jim Rome comes on from 2 to 5. I've been a huge Rich Eisen fan for a long time.
You and
I mean, we grew up on Rich Eisen on SportsCenter, when we were younger. And, of course, now he's got, his syndicated national radio show that's great, NFL Network, all the different things that he does. So that's a huge addition for KFH as well.
Yeah, and Eisen is his show. I listened to his show years ago every day, and it's really good. And he's entertaining. He's as entertaining as he was on TV. So if you haven't heard that, I think you'll be excited about that too. Rick asked us on YouTube about the 9 to 11. So yes, it is a replay, Rick, but it is by design keeping the show as big as it can be. Who knows what the future holds, but initially that's what we're going to do. Is keep things the way they are for our current audience and then grow to a new audience at the same time. So that's the goal there. To answer that question, I know he's asked that a couple of times and meant to answer that yesterday and didn't have a chance, but we'll have it all. All right, let's take a break. We got tons to get to today. We'll preview the football weekend. We'll preview the Shockers tonight. But when we return, CFP trend continues. The teams with buys struggle. Notre Dame takes down Georgia. We'll talk about it next. Hey, thank you, Prairie Fire Coffee, for keeping us cooled up each morning here on KFH and at all the Odyssey studios. Appreciate them and their delicious coffee. Welcome back in Sports Daily. It's Jacob Albrock. It's Tommy Caster. Jad Chambers, not in his normal chair, but with us today before we make a big transition on Monday. We're glad to be here with you. It's going to be exciting. On Monday, it's exciting today, though. Tommy, a prediction comes true for me, and it's that all the teams that hadn't played football in like a month would really struggle, and they all did. Arizona State was the lone team to find success, but it took them essentially until the fourth quarter to find it. And so, look, this is something we've got to look at as the tournament moves forward, and as we learn how to best do this, is what do we do about that? Because that is clearly going to be an issue moving forward. Would you like to have the bye? Of course you would, because you don't have to play the other game to advance to that round. But at the same time, obviously and pretty clearly, it has a negative impact on things, as most it does in most sports. Like, we see this all the time. So we got to think about that as we look at the tournament. But here's the good thing with it. Is you get a scenario now where if you look at the rankings of the CFP and where teams ended, Tommy, and we go through this all the time, and again, there it's not, you know, we got to look at it through the lens of knowing the teams that got the byes struggled to some degree, right? But if we look at the final CFP rankings and where things ended and how they were seeded out. And, you know, again, it's a bit confusing, but the final rankings of the CFP, you've got teams that wouldn't have been in there to begin with, right? We've got teams. Had we done this the old way, you would have had Oregon, you would have had Georgia. Perhaps you would have had Boise State. You probably would not have. You'd have had Arizona State. If we go back and look at the rankings before the final seeding, you would have had Texas and Penn State be there. Oregon, Georgia would have, you know, been out. So you're seeing, you know, if you want to look at it that way, you're seeing Notre Dame and Ohio State, who would not have been in, get in. So, you know, however you want to slice it, we saw teams that perhaps wouldn't have a chance to be there. However heavily we want to weight the byes and all these things. But my point is, this is going to invite the best scenario to try, once we get it all right, to get the best team in there. Ohio State is the perfect example, right? That's a team that we felt like all year could be the best team in the country, might be the best team in the country. Oregon, who after the regular season was the best team in the country, beat them by what, a point, was it? It was very tight. And then they had their dud game to Michigan. That's a kind of team that you'd like to see be able to get into a 12-team playoff, simply for the reason that that might be the best team in the country. And we need to see that play out through a playoff, right? Compare it to the NFL, for instance. Do we just assume the Chiefs are the Super Bowl champions because they had the best regular season record? No, of course we don't. Do we assume that it should just be the Chiefs, the Lions, the Vikings, and the Bills? Well, I think the Ravens would have something to say about that, right? So it's been nonsensical for the history of this sport to do it the way we've done it. And now, right away, we get an example of a team like Ohio State who's able to go through. And Ohio State's good enough that regardless of this bye, you know, holding Oregon back, which I think it did, it was a one-point game when they played in the regular season. They're on a neutral field. Ohio State probably wins that game, I don't know, 6 times out of 10. I mean, that's a guess, obviously. But, you know, it's a good example of why we needed to be doing this for a long time. Did anybody in the world give Arizona State a chance to take Texas to the brinks like that? I mean, Arizona State's a fourth down from being in the semifinal.
Yeah.
And we would not have known that in any year prior because they would have never had the chance to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I always relate it back to what other sports are doing. And I know that, you know, college football is different than, you know, anything else in the same way that the NFL is different than any other sport. But, like, look at a couple of years ago, and you're going to absolutely recall this and remember it, but Major League Baseball in the World Series a couple of years ago, your Rangers and the Diamondbacks, you know, were in the World Series. And weren't both of those teams wild card teams?
They were.
Right? They were wild card teams, and they both played for a World Series. And, you know, so I don't think anybody, you know, looking back on it, would say that neither one of those teams were deserving to play in the World Series. They made it into the playoffs. They were wild card teams. They may not have won their division, but they made it to the World Series, and they competed, and the Rangers won the World Series. And nobody is taking that away from them. It should be the same way in college football to an extent, where, like, you can consider some of these teams that are the lower seeded teams kind of as wild cards. They didn't win their conference championship.
That is what they are.
I mean, that's basically what they are. You know, they're at large bids, right, but they're basically wild cards. Right. You know, they didn't, you know, win their conference or whatever in some cases, but they still made it in. And, you know, for a couple of these teams, you know, they obviously won their first round CFP game and you know, they have a win in the 12-team playoff. And here they are competing against the top seeds that, you know, those top seeds earned byes. But at the end of the day, like, one team upsetting a team that had a bye is a coincidence. Two teams, maybe another coincidence. Three. You get to all four of them. Like, clearly that's the trend where you've got, what, 5, 6, 7, and 8 all making it to the semifinals of the CFP. It's clearly a trend. I mean, clearly shows that, you know, number one, the seeds from 5 through 8 are really, really good football teams. But number two, you know, I think that those teams that got the bye, 1 through 4, they clearly, you know, struggled with that time off.
There's no question. Do we get that exact same result if we don't have the length of time off? Do we get the exact same result of these four teams? I would suspect no. We certainly could, right? It absolutely could. Penn State's path was always the path that you wanted to have, right? Boise State left a lot on the table in their game. You know, Georgia had an injured quarterback, so Notre Dame's path was pretty good. Does Ohio State roll through the two teams they did? Possibly. And we saw how close to... So, yeah, we absolutely could have had the same result without the byes. But the byes had an impact, right? The byes, there's no... I mean, it's subjective, right? Because you don't convince me otherwise. It's fine, which is something we need to take a look at moving forward. Doesn't change the fact, though, that teams that are not considered in that top four. And look, the argument from college football crazies forever, supporters of the way it's done, is this waters down the regular season. And I would say the same thing I've always said. It absolutely does not water down the regular season. Were we any more or less excited because we saw Ohio State and Oregon play again? No, we weren't. We weren't any less excited when we watched it the first time that it could be a potential rematch. We weren't any less excited when we watched it the second time, right? It didn't have any bearing either way. We don't think about things that way in any of the other sports that we consume. All we want to do in those is find the best team. And we've never had the ability to truly find the best team in college football. Now, maybe the best team ended up getting there anyway. I agree, but they didn't have to prove it the right way.
Well, and take a look at Notre Dame, for example. You know, the way that everything used to go in college football, Notre Dame would not have been in the mix whatsoever. You go all the way back to September, Northern Illinois beat Notre Dame, if you'll recall, in South Bend, beat them 16-14. Had it been like the old days, Notre Dame would have been totally out of the picture. Does anybody want to tell me that Notre Dame is not deserving to play for a national championship after what we saw yesterday and what we've seen down the stretch for them? Because they absolutely are worthy of playing and competing to go play for a national championship. But in the old way of doing things, that loss to Northern Illinois back in September probably would have disqualified Notre Dame from competing for a national championship. The way that things play out now, Notre Dame gets in. They win two games so far in this format. They've got one more to go. And then they can play for a national championship. It doesn't end their season prematurely. They're not overly penalized. Yeah, they had their work cut out for them after losing to Northern Iowa to start off the season. But how many times have teams had these high goals and aspirations and they stumble out of the gate and then they're just done. Like they're done in September and you don't even want to talk about them anymore. There's no reason to talk about them anymore. They're not going to be competing for a national championship. This opens the door for teams like Notre Dame to continue to have something to play for as the season goes on.
Every team that's in there right now had a reason to not get in typically, in typical fashion. Every single one of them. All of these teams, right?
Ohio State losing in the last second to Oregon. You know, like that was a huge
Ohio
matchup,
State lost
right?
to Michigan.
That's true. That's
Ohio
a,
State
yeah,
lost
a good
to
point.
Michigan.
I mean, you know,
so,
like, yeah.
That's a team that doesn't get in typically. And you know, you can say, well, they should have done it to get the... Yeah, but we want to find the best team at the end of the year, period. Like, we want to find the best team. Texas, after losing to Georgia in the SEC championship and losing to them twice in the same season, likely would not have made it in. Penn State likely would not have made it in. Maybe they do. They didn't play a conference championship game, right? Or they did. They did and lost, but they also had a loss to Ohio State, so they had two losses. So they're a fringe team, right? They're this fringy team. We don't know. So it's you just can't guess at it, right? Like the guesswork has always been so stupid. I mean, stupid. It's ridiculous that we've done it this way. And now we have this system in place where we can best determine our national champion. Even with the disadvantage of the long buys, we will find out who the best team in the country at the end of the season is when this is all said and done. And most years, I think we suspect we have done that, but there have been lots of years where we feel like maybe the best team didn't even get a chance to be there. Florida State won a power conference last year and went undefeated and didn't even get in because they had their quarterback injured. That's insanity. Rick says the best team normally doesn't win the NCAA tournament. I don't know that I would say normally. I would say often, sometimes, maybe. I wouldn't say normally. We don't know. Basketball is different than football, right? We see far more upsets in basketball than we do football. Football lends itself, I think, to the hardest or the most difficult thing. Like, if we're talking about upsets in sports, I think football is where we see it the least. It's hard. It is the hardest to have a true upset in football. We know in baseball, it's not hard at all. In basketball, especially in college basketball, it's hard, right? Because we see this all the time in conference play. Like how often do great teams struggle on the road in conference play, let alone go play a tournament in that format? It's why we love the chaos and the insanity of college basketball. But to Rick's point, yeah, I don't know that we always have the best team win. I cannot imagine a scenario where even a 12-team playoff, or if this ever goes to 16, and it probably will, having a team have the type of Cinderella run it would take to not be the best team in the country. That would be, like, you'd have to imagine Boise State. What would we have there? You'd have to imagine Boise State running through that and beating Penn State, then beating Notre Dame, and then let's say beating Ohio State, who's favored over Texas. If they did that and their only loss was a one-point loss to Oregon, I think you could say they're the best team in the country. But the thought of that is so unlikely, right? One time, maybe. Three times, doubt it. Doubt it. But who knows? That's why we play it. That's why we play it.
I don't think that my argument with the teams that all won in this round to move on to the semifinals, I'm not saying that any one of them are you know, objectively better than the four teams that got the bye, like the top four seeds. I'm not saying that, like, they're more, and when I say better, they're not more deserving to win a national championship than any of the teams that got a bye, but they absolutely deserve to be in the hunt. They absolutely deserved to compete for a national championship. And so regardless of all of the warts that this system has in year number one, in all of the issues that we've ran into and things that I'm sure are going to be adjusted and changed or whatever, you're never going to convince me that those teams, you know, whether we're talking Notre Dame or Penn State or Ohio State, whoever in those, you know, Arizona State, in those scenarios didn't deserve to be in the hunt, didn't deserve to compete for a national championship. Texas absolutely deserved to be in the hunt for that. They deserved to compete for that. And like we talked about before, all of those teams all had reasons where in the past system, in the past way things were done, they would have been out. It wouldn't have even been competing for a national championship. This makes the sport better. It's not a perfect system. I'm not sure that it ever will be perfect. Like, I don't think it ever will be, like, perfect,
teams,
right?
Yeah, there's too many teams playing different schedules. It'll never be
perfect. But this is absolutely a better way to do things. And I would hope that we don't have massive wholesale changes moving forward. I hope that things get tweaked a little bit with the scheduling and the length of time and all of that. But, man, I think I'm more locked into it this year than I ever have been.
Me too. And it's just because there are more meaningful games, right? You're not trying to have me lock into a game that means nothing. The Sugar Bowl, if it doesn't help determine a national championship, great for those teams, great for that region. I'm not in. Like, it doesn't – I need it to mean something. Otherwise, it's no different than a preseason game. It's no different than an exhibition game. It is an exhibition game. Now – we have it mean something, and it's meant a whole lot more. It's been more fun, even with the margins. College, like, we act like, Tommy, in the regular season, college football doesn't lend itself to large margins anyway. Like, that, this isn't the NFL, right, where a spread rarely gets over 7 points. This is college football. We have big margins of victory all the time in college football. Whether we have 2 teams get in, 4 teams get in, 12 teams get in, doesn't matter. Regular season, conference championships, like, teams blow each other out all the time in college football. That's college football. So what I don't want to happen is everybody say, oh, these games haven't been that close. This is totally unnecessary and not worth it. Yes, it is. The teams that are doing the blowing out would not have even been there in the first place.
Yep.
So, like, it is necessary. This is how we best determine a champion. It's not perfect. It needs tweaks. It'll never be perfect. Because none of these teams play the same teams, right? Like, they basically play in different leagues during the regular season and then all come together. That's why this has always been, that's why it's exciting. That's why this is going to be a blast. There will be years where the Big 12 will be better than the Big 10. There will be years where the ACC might be better than the SEC. Probably not. The SEC will usually be, but you get what I'm saying. There will be years where the Mountain West might be just as good as the Big 12.
You mentioned the SEC. The only team from the SEC that's competing in the semifinals played in the Big 12 a year ago.
Is the former Big 12 team, right. And again, what does that mean? Well, it doesn't mean a whole lot. It just means that there are 4 really good teams there that happen to play other places. And it's, you know, I don't take too much into that as far as what things are. Anywho, it'll be fun. We'll have it. All right, when we come back, we'll preview the Shockers a little bit. If you want to win some HTO, you can do that. Text keyword T to our text hotline right now, and you can win that HTOT root beer coming back on Monday. We'll be back. Shocker Talk next. Mention that HTO contest. That line to text the keyword T to is 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Again, free iced tea, free iced or hot coffee, including root beer, coming back Monday. 20357, text the keyword T. Welcome back into Sports Daily. Jake Ballbrock, Tommy Caster here. We will make some football picks in our second hour, so make sure you stay tuned for that chance to win. Tommy, we get the Shockers this weekend out at Temple. Wichita State is ready to rock and roll here, I think, into the conference season. It wasn't overly impressive against Friends in the final little tune-up there, but they got it done. And now they go and they play a team in Temple who is, similar in their net ranking. I think they're like 124 and Wichita's 102 or something like that. So it's an opener I think we've all been waiting for in a big, big way. Wichita State started the conference season last year 0-6. And then I think it was something like 2-8 or whatever it was not good. Now they go on the road, face a team who at check right now is a 1.5-point favorite. So the Shockers are slight underdogs, which is what I figured it would be, as Temple, again, is very similar in the net and at home. And here we go, Wichita State with a chance to, you know, maybe I'm the only one, but I've been waiting for this because it's been a promising offseason into a promising non-con, but it all matters what they do in the conference. We've set expectations for this program, and I think a lot of fans are that where you'd like to see them, and that's back near the top of the American Athletic Conference. I'm not saying they need to win it this year. That's probably an unreasonable thing to say right now, but they need to be near the top of it and certainly much better than they were a year ago.
We got an update about Ronnie DeGray, by the way, yesterday, I think it was, or maybe 2 days ago, from Paul Mills, that he's supposed to get a doctor's opinion, I think, here shortly. The plan, I think, is still for him to return by January 14th. But what was interesting was Coach Mills said that that was possible but not probable. So I don't know if we're going to see him, you know, push that out even further into the end of January, early February. But the Shockers, I think, you know, considering that they've been without him and they've dealt with, you know, some other injuries and things like that throughout the course of the season, and they're still in a position to where we think that they could be, you know, competing in the top part of the American Conference, even without Ronnie DeGray on the court, I think is a testament to the overall talent that the team has.
Yeah, it is. And look, it's been awesome that they've been able to get to this point and look as good as they have without him. I was talking to TJ Cleland, friend of the program, one of the hosts here of the program, about this yesterday. I think I would tell you at this point, obviously Xavier Bell, the local talent, and his propensity to score has been an incredible development this season. But for me, the fact that Quincy Ballard has been able to play basically 25 to 30 minutes a game with DeGray out has been one of the great developments of this season. He's had a lot of injury issues over his career. You worried a great deal with DeGray gone because, you know, Mate is a very different kind of player, and he's not going to just step in and replace Ballard, at least effectively defensively. He does different things well. And so that was a big concern with DeGray because he can kind of play everywhere, but he really can back you up at the big. And Ballard has shown he can stay on the floor. That has been incredible to see. Now you're going to get into a situation, since this has happened, where DeGray comes back and you can probably play a lot of minutes with both of those guys on the floor. Wichita State's going to get a whole lot better defensively, I think, when that happens. And then they have a starting lineup. You know, you can mix and match it however you want, but you're going to have at least seven guys who are playing significant minutes, which is a good thing, and probably more like eight and maybe even nine. And now you're looking at depth. You're looking at all of these things. I just think, like, the arrow is definitely pointed in the right direction. They got, you know, they didn't play their best basketball against France. There's no doubt about it. They turned the ball over 18 times. I'm not sure if that's a season high, but I'm pretty sure it's a season high. I don't know why that is, but it's not a trend. So I'm not terribly concerned about it. But they're doing a lot of things that make you confident. You know, they're shooting the three, at least with confidence. And we've always known this isn't going to be a three-point shooting specialty type team. But they've got two guys who can, on a bad shooting night, get you points in Justin Hill and Xavier Bell. Both of those guys can score, even when the team's not shooting it particularly well, because both of those guys have become really, really good basket attackers who can get to the free throw line. That's a great thing to have in your back pocket. I think with DeGray, they'll get a whole lot better defensively. If you can be a good defensive team that can score without on a bad shooting night, I think that raises your floor a great deal. And I think Wichita State is that. I think that's what they are or can be.
Hasn't that been kind of the challenge, at least this year, has been just the, I don't want to use the word toughness because I feel like this team is tough. You know, watching them, I definitely get that feeling from them. But when they have struggled, they've been pushed around a little bit, and it's been off and on.
Well, because they're outsized without DeGray. I mean, they are. I get it. I understand why it's happening.
Yeah,
that's why DeGray's return is such a big deal.
Yeah, I think that you know, watching, I go back to the low point of the season. You know, had to have been, I would think, the Florida game. You know, when they were just completely out muscled and pushed around and out rebounded and out toughed and all of that. And I'm sure that that's, you know, what Paul Mills probably points towards, you know, as we get into conference play, is, you know, we've got to avoid that, because when that happens, it takes us out of our game. It takes us out of our rhythm, and we tend to struggle. We tend to not look good. We tend to get out of what we are known for. And so I actually, and I know we talked about it at the time when that happened and how bad of a loss that was for Wichita State. But I think that is, and there have been, you know, a couple of other moments that haven't been outstanding for Wichita State, for sure, where we've been concerned. And, you know, of course, losing to UMKC at home in a bye game, that was a low point too. But I'm kind of glad that those couple things happened, because I feel like Paul Mills is the kind of coach to be able to use that and get that once they get into conference play here starting on Monday, to be able to say, look, we cannot do these things. If we do these things, it's going to end up like what we saw against UMKC or against Florida when we lost by 40-some points. You know, so using them as motivational pieces or, you know, things to point to of where we don't want to be as a program, I think is going to be extremely important for them once they get into the grind of the American.
I agree. I don't know what to make of the UMKC game. I really don't. I don't know how that happens. I just don't. I don't take a lot from it. Florida's just a really good team. Like, every team has dud games. That doesn't concern me.
A 40-some point loss, though, I think at the time was concerning, regardless who the opponent was.
No. You never want to lose by that margin. But what I'm saying is, like, big picture, losing, getting blown out by a really good team in a holiday tournament, I don't know that that means a great deal, big picture, if it's a one-off. UMKC is the one where you just sort of scratch your head at it. That should not happen. But it hasn't. Nothing has been like a trend from that stuff, right? Like, we know that there are a handful of guys on the team who can really shoot the three. That's a development for this program. We know that they have a really, really talented big who is finding ways to stay on the floor when they need him to the most. They have, you know, when they get DeGray back, between DeGray and Beverly, a couple of Swiss Army knives that you could really throw out anywhere. That's a great thing to have. We've known they have the experience, and now they have two scorers. We didn't know if they would have enough scorers. And we thought, oh, okay, maybe Corey Washington comes in and is a scorer because he's a shooter. Well, that's not, I mean, he's been fine, but what's happened is you have two attackers who are great scorers. And to me, like, that's confidence building, because there are going to be games where Wichita State does not shoot the ball well. Knowing they can get to the line with Hill and Bell at least raises that floor up. And the other thing that's really developed, and the other thing that will help them avoid the big letdowns, is they're shooting free throws at a really, really, really high clip. That helps any team. And it seems so elementary, but it's not always there. You go back to the Friends game. In a game where they weren't, you know, they weren't their best, let's be honest, they shot the lights out from the free throw line. Well, I say shot the lights out, 76%, but they get to the free throw line a ton. And those are floor raising things. I feel like the floor is so much higher than it was a year ago. I still don't know that we know what the ceiling is, and we won't know until they start playing these conference games. But at least I feel much better in the floor of what Wichita State brings to the table each and every night.
I think that you have to. I mean, I think that overall you have to feel, you know, at least a little bit more, I don't know, I wouldn't use the word confident, but at least optimistic that, you know, the anomalies, the outliers, were the games that we talked about a couple of minutes ago. The dud games, the downward, you know, the games that you don't just want to forget about. But we also know that American Conference play a season ago for Wichita State was not kind to them, just at all. Like, just at all, it wasn't kind whatsoever. it's a different cast of characters, you know, in a lot of ways for this Shocker team getting into conference play. And I think that we've seen, in spite of the duds, in spite of the issues, we've seen enough flashes. And I think that you mentioned Xavier Bell a couple minutes ago. Seeing what he's been able to do, taking a step forward this season, I think will, you know, he's been there. He's gone through the gauntlet of American play a season ago. I think that that kind of experience is extremely important for Wichita State, and knowing that he has taken a step forward this year, I think they'll lean on him. But then you've got guys like Justin Hill and Corey Washington that have been major producers throughout the course of their careers anyway. And so I think having them and that experience to lean on in conference play, I'm not sure anybody, if you're predicting that Wichita State will suffer the same fate in American play as they did a year ago, you're not watching this team, because I don't think it's going to be that way, right? I don't think it's going to, barring like a major collapse or something, I don't think it's going to be that way this season for Wichita State.
No, I don't either. There's more depth, there's more confidence, there's more experience. It seems very unlikely. Then, so the question becomes, well, where could they finish? We saw Memphis get a huge win in their opener. Memphis looks really good. I'm not going to say I think Wichita State's going to finish ahead of Memphis, but I think you can stop there with saying things like that, right? I think you can stop right there. I think they have a shot, have at least a shot to be anywhere else, right? Anywhere else in there behind Memphis doesn't seem totally wild and out of the question. If we go and look at the net right now, Memphis is at 30. The next highest ranked team is North Texas at 76. And then you have Wichita State at 102, Florida Atlantic's right there with them at 109, and then Temple. So if Wichita State can go to Philadelphia and look really good against Temple tonight, I don't think there's any reason why you can't say, well, yeah, they can compete with North Texas. North Texas 8-3. It's all on the table. It's all on the table, and we're so excited tonight to see them play. All right. We're going to take another break. We'll come back. Coming up in the next hour, we will make football picks. We got the full cast in for that. Looking forward to it. A lot to get to. It's Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Caster at Sports Daily. Coming right back.